Good morning again, everyone. It is now 9:31. Welcome to this meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health, the 23rd of March. Each and everyone are welcome, including the members of the Portfolio Committee, the staff, the members from the department, and we will get an indication who will be here from the department. And also members of the media, I see, who are present. I see ENCA Social 2 on our platform, and Ms. Majalamba would let me know if there are any other members of the media present today on our meeting. And so we are about to receive today presentations from the Auditor General of South Africa on the health sector's annual performance plan and budget review, and then the health sector's audit outcomes, and also a report on the vaccines audit report. So you're very welcome also, members from the Auditor General's office. I will be coming back to you a little bit later. Before we proceed, Ms. Majalamba, can we get an idea of attendance and apologies and about the live transmissions of our Portfolio Committee meeting today and attendance of any other media stations or persons? Thank you very much.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Geller, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I'm not sure if Uma Muhlengwa has logged in as Magdalene. I'm not sure if...
Yes, I logged in.
Oh, okay. Uma Muhlengwa also. I've received apologies from Ms. Clark. She will join the meeting later. And Ms. Sukers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Majalamba. Members, before we proceed, we should be reminded that this is a virtual meeting that is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which has an option that allows a member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The Secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjections. So that having said, I also want to welcome the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Mr. Joe Hartler, to give us an indication who will be attending from the Ministry, whether there are any apologies, and also from the Department. Is Mr. Hartler on the platform?
Not yet, Chair. Thank you.
Not yet. I am fully aware that the Minister is attending Cabinet today and also that the Deputy Minister is attending a program. I think it's either in Limpopo or Mpumalanga with the Deputy President today. So we'll accept those as apologies from the Office of the Ministry. AG, the representatives, I see two hands. I do not do iPhone XREs before I take the hand of Honorable Munyai. Please make certain those who are on our platform that we at least be able to identify you, especially if you want to raise your hand.
The iPhone XR chair is Ms. Clark. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Clark, thank you. So I will take the first hand, which I saw raised, is that of Honorable Munyai, and then will be followed by Honorable Clark.
Oh, no, you already covered. I wanted us that we can move without the minister and the deputy minister, because this is our meeting of the portfolio with the AG, you know, so that's very important. I'm sure after this meeting, at some point, we'll have a meeting with the department after we're clear on the findings that arises from the AG itself. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you, Honorable Munyai. Honorable Talk.
Thank you, Chair. I've just landed, so I am on my phone. I will change my name on my phone to be recognized after speaking to you. But I also would just like to raise the draft regulations of the health department that's come out. Now, I really feel that those draft regulations should be discussed at the committee in terms of what the changes are going to be and what impact those draft regulations are going to have. So if I could request that, Chair, I think it's really important. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Clark. I'm noting that for later on for us to have in our summary a reference to that. Thank you very much. There are no other hands. Let me welcome again the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. Who are you being led by? And if you will, the person who is leading, can please indicate so, and then also introduce the rest of the team and go straight on with the presentations. Thank you very much. Just be mindful that we do have a sitting today also, and that we have allocated time until 1300 hours today. And we would really have to pace ourselves very well, honorable members, so that we are able to finish on time. Office of the AG.
Thank you, honorable chairperson. Honorable chairperson, good morning. Honorable members, good morning. And other colleagues, good morning. My name is Andries Segeto. I'm the business unit leader within the office of the AG that takes care of, amongst others, of portfolio. Honorable Chair, honorable members, today we've been invited to come and brief the portfolio committee on the three topics as outlined by the honorable chairperson. Honorable Chair, taking my guidance from what you've just put on the table in terms of the time constraints as well as the busy program, we will then proceed to do the presentations. We'll start off with the first presentation being the high level feedback on the APP reviews, and then that'll be followed by the sector processes. And as it seems that we are then supposed to continue with all our presentations, those will then be followed by the presentation on the vaccine special report. Honorable Chair, just before we continue the presentations, a bit of logistics and housekeeping from our side as the Office of the AG. I am joined by Ms. Thabero Musisinyane. The committee would be quite familiar with Ms. Thabero Musisinyane. She was the engagement manager within the office of the AG, who was responsible for the health portfolio. Honorable Chair, honorable members, it gives me great pleasure to announce that she has progressed within the organization. She's now appointed as a deputy business unit leader. She will still be involved within our unit, also assisting in health, but she will no longer be primarily responsible for the health portfolio as she was in the past. This role will now be assumed by Ms. Mule Tipe. She's also joined us on the call. I will hand over to Ms. Thabero and then also to Ms. Tipe to just introduce themselves. And then I will then proceed with giving the platform and setting the scene in terms of the presentations. Thabero?
Thank you so much. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think as introduced by Mr. Segeto, my name is Thabero Musisinyane, and I think the committee is familiar with me. I will hand over to Mule to then introduce herself.
Good morning to the Honourable Chair and Members of Parliament and colleagues. As Andres has already mentioned, my name is Mule Tibe, and I'll be the engagement manager that is responsible for the health sector. Thank you.
Your colleagues, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we will then start with the presentations, but maybe just before we get started, from the presentations point of view, the APP review, it's worth noting, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, that we had really hoped that we would be in a position to provide the portfolio committee with a view of the APPs of the national department, including that of the nine provincial departments. Unfortunately, our provincial the provincial health departments, the review of the APPs are still in progress, have not been finalized. The planned date for finalization for those is currently planned for the end of March. So the feedback that will be given will just be primarily limited to the National Department of Health. So that shouldn't take too long. As soon as we have our colleagues in the respective provinces, along with the provincial colleagues, have finalized the reviews of the provincial APPs, we will consolidate the feedback and we will distribute to the portfolio committee through the chairperson. And then, Honourable Chair, you would then recall that in the previous financial year when we did the BRRR briefing, we had included a particular notification that we will come back and brief the portfolio committee on the sector focus areas and the sector outcomes on those focus areas at that particular point in time. So Tabera will also do a quick three or four slide presentation for us in terms of those key observations and findings from that process, which will then be followed by the vaccine presentation. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, insofar as the vaccine presentation is concerned, because that's going to take up the bulk of our efforts and our attention here today, it's worthwhile that I mention by way of background a couple of things just to keep in mind by the time we get to the vaccine presentation. The first one, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the first point I would like to bring to the attention of the committee was just in terms of background, how this audit came about. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members would note that as part of the government's response to the management of the COVID-19 pandemic, the government then embarked on a process of acquiring the vaccines in order to keep the citizens safe. The Honourable Minister at that particular point in time, in January 2021, then approached the office of the AG and set up a meeting with the Auditor General, Tsakani, and they had an engagement, and the Minister then requested that we consider doing a similar real-time audit to that which was done on the audit of the PPEs in the previous financial year. So an agreement was reached. That engagement was on the 22nd of January 2021, where the minister requested such assistance. From that process, we then proceeded as the Office of the AG to go and develop what we refer to as a value chain based on our understanding of the processes that the department would then be embarking on to then acquire, purchase the vaccines, get them in the country, and then ultimately administer them to the citizens, making sure that it's supported by a platform of information. I don't know if it's possible for my colleagues to maybe just quickly flight a high level, the value chain, which was then developed just for the benefit of the portfolio committee and ease of reference. So in that particular value chain, the intention was really to bring to the attention of management that as and when they were going to go about the process of implementing the vaccine program, that there were certain key things that they were required to take note of and just consider in the back of their minds. Can we just make it a presentation format or slightly larger, please? Thank you. So we developed the value chain, shared it with management, asked for their inputs. We consulted certain CSOs or civil society organizations as part of this process. We also consulted the research, the National Research Foundation as well. And some of those colleagues provided us with some invaluable inputs of things that the sector needed to consider as and when they were embarking on the rollout of the program. The main intention, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, was just to bring to the attention of the department and the sector potential stumbling blocks or things that they needed to consider and risks they needed to manage as and when they were rolling out the vaccine program. So you will note, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, that some of the points that are included under some of the blocks actually have question marks. So they were really to just jolt management's you know, thinking processes so that they keep these things at the back of their minds as and when they were rolling out the vaccine program. So emanating from this process, we then identified a number of key risks and preventative controls, which we then shared with the National Department's Director General, the DG, as well as some of the key officials. Those key risks and preventative controls were also shared with the executive authority for them to consider. And on the backdrop of those processes, we then went and developed our audit procedures. Honorable Chair, honorable members, you would understand that from the Office of the AG, when we are usually tasked with such audits, our main focus will be on wastage or leakage, trying to make sure that our attention is focused on assisting our portfolios out there to prevent instances of leakage and wastage in the process. So from our point of view, a lot of focus was then on procurement processes as well as the acquisition processes. And then ultimately, this was supplemented by the distribution and the logistical arrangements, and ultimately just to make sure from a service delivery point of view that the jabs ended up in the arms of the citizens aligned with the set criteria and adherence to the criteria that would have been set out by the portfolio. So we embarked on the audit process from January up until May is really when a lot of our work kicked off, all the way up until August. And I'm mentioning this explicitly to the committee just to manage expectations as well, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, because the whole idea of a real-time audit is that you go in quickly and you identify some potential gaps or areas of improvement for management. You report those to management so that management then can then go back and implement the necessary remedial action or rectification processes to make sure that subsequent expenditure or subsequent processes are not subject to the same weaknesses and shortcomings. So we then had to agree on a cutoff time. So the cutoff time for the audit at that particular point in time was August. So we did the work all the way up until August. And from August onwards, we then embarked on our concluding and evaluating procedures where we evaluated the outcomes of the work that was performed and then ultimately also preparing the report, which was then shared with management. Honorable Chair, honorable members, it's also important to mention that we did issue a report. But for the purpose of the engagement, it's also important that we mention that that report was not made public. So in other words, there was no media briefing, as would ordinarily be the case if we do a public tabling or briefing by the Office of the AG. So there was no tabling because of the numerous changes and adjustments that happened as the vaccine program was rolled out, but also as mainly informed by the slow uptake that was then identified and resulting in the slow spending and then also the slow processes within the sector. The findings that had been identified up until that point in time were therefore shared with management via a special management report. So that report was issued to the Office of the National DG on the 28th of January on 2022. The reason why that was shared only in January and not in November, as was originally planned, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is because you would recall by the time we were finalizing the report, the DG, who is the incumbent in the position of the accounting officer at the department, the national department, came back from serving his suspension right at the end of November. So he then requested some space and opportunity to engage on the report prior to us finalizing it. So that was duly granted, and the national accounting officer then spent the next couple of weeks from end of November to then provide us with whatever additional information in response to some of the findings that may have been raised, and also applying himself in terms of the report and some of the key messages. And bearing in mind the December breaks, we were then only able to finalize the report and issue it towards the end of January. That's just a bit of context to explain the long time span from August 2021, when we cut off our audit work, that we had intended to issue the report in November, but ultimately only issued it to management in January. And also, the importance of mentioning that it was a special management report. So therefore, the report was issued to management, but we did engage the minister on it. And the minister indicated that should any party be interested in the report, they can request it from the department, and that we can also share it in terms of the portfolio committee session, because we are all aware that the portfolio committee sessions are public sessions And therefore, even though the findings may have been shared with management, it therefore means that they then therefore become public once we then engage the portfolio committee in a public platform such as that of today. Then, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I'm going to cut off my intro by saying the report was subject to the normal Office of the AG quality assurance processes. It was subject to the normal rules of engagement. We had extensive engagements with management, including the accounting officer, both accounting officers, because we had to deal with an acting accounting officer when we're doing and performing the audit work and concluding. And then when we were reaching our reporting phase, we then had to re-engage the actual accounting officer who then came back from serving his suspension. So a lot of robust engagement, so information duly considered. Management did submit some information. A lot of the information was considered in evaluating and concluding on the findings. However, some information that was submitted was more to provide context and give us a view in terms of the difficult circumstances under which management was operating. But again, if it does not address the information, if it does not address the finding that was raised, we then note the circumstances, but it does not deal away with the finding. The finding still remains as being reported. Where those circumstances were noted, instances were noted, we did indicate as such in our report in terms of the auditor's conclusions. And then, Honourable Chair, we also flagged certain key risks and process gaps for management in the special management report. Obviously, because when you are dealing with such projects, you have the liberty to then give them additional insights over and above just the non-compliance findings. So there are some of those findings which are termed actual findings where there was an instance of non-compliance or non-adherence that was identified. But the report also contains other findings where we identified a risk or a gap that we brought to the attention of management, and those we ordinarily refer to as observations. So just for the committee not to be alarmed when you see a distinction in our presentation, us mentioning a finding and then us also mentioning an observation. It's just with that background in mind that the finding is where there was actual non-compliance or non-adherence to a particular process or policy or legislation, and an observation is where there was a gap or a risk that we still feel was important to bring under the intention, the attention of management in this regard. Then, Chair, we also want to mention that we appreciate the efforts of management. We understand that it could not have been easy for them to have done their job and then also to engage us in terms of the real-time audit and availing themselves. Without further ado, Chair, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Thapelo Musisinyane, who will then deal with the actual presentations for us. Like mentioned earlier, she spent quite a limited amount of time on the APP review because of the reasons I outlined earlier on, and then we'll deal with some of the key discussion points on the sector, where our focus was on the medico-legal claims and the impact it has on the sector's ability to then utilize some of these funds we are paying on the medico-legal claims, on increasing our capacity in terms of service delivery, and then also some key infrastructure findings. As we all know, infrastructure is quite key in our ability to deliver render services as a sector. And then we will then ultimately deal with the big presentation, which is the findings on the vaccine special management report as issues to management. Thank you, Chair. With your permission and indulgence, Thapelo, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you so much. Good morning once again to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and the colleagues on the call. I do note that the introduction was a bit long. However, I will then start covering the three sets of presentation. Honourable Chair, I'll get guidance from you because I do understand the fact that the three sets of slides might end up with me speaking for an hour. But if Honorable Chair and Honorable Members would want me to stop between specifically maybe the sector message and the vaccine report, I will take guidance from you, Honorable Chair.
I think let's try to finish it. 1 hour should be fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. So as mentioned by Mr. Skhetho in the introduction, I will not spend time on the interim review of the APP for the 2022-23 because as indicated, unfortunately, the sector is still busy with some of the review. The presentations that we have shared was only relating to the National Department of Health. So just maybe to remind the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is the objective of the APP review, it's really to provide an early warning system where we are able to review some of the programs, specifically the ones we deem are important before the APP is finalized. And from that process, we allow management to be able to make any corrections required in their APP before it's finalized. So that is mainly the process that we follow, and we don't actually look at every detail. I think we also want to highlight the fact that we also don't look at the underlying systems or supporting documentation. Our focus is mainly between the APP itself and the TID. So for the current period, one thing that we also want to highlight is the fact that we do not look at the relevancy of the indicators to MTSF, as well as the completeness of the indicators to cover the MTSF outcomes. So the process that we followed in the current year, under normal circumstances, we focus on one program. But for the National Department of Health, we did look at all the programs, including the APP, but the specific focus was mainly in program two, which is the one that we have scoped in for the current year audit. There were a number of findings that we had noted, but I think we are really happy to report the fact that the findings were not material, and management was able to correct all those findings in their APP. So by the time the APP is tabled, they would already taken into account the findings that we have raised. There were a few findings under indicators not well defined, which some of it is just a matter of aligning what is sitting in the technical indicator description and what's sitting on the main APP. And then there were some indicators that are not verifiable. Because management was able to correct this, Honorable Chair, I will not spend any additional time in this presentation, and I'd want to move to the presentation on the sector messages. So as Mrs. Khato indicated in the introduction, we presented last year in November the outcomes of the National Department entities, and we really wanted the committee to spend a lot of time looking at and focusing on those outcomes, and requested that the sector messages be then tabled later. So today we are tabling the sector message, and I'd also want to highlight, subsequent to our meeting on the 8th of December, the AG tabled a general report, and in the general report, they did include the sector messages. What we did in the current year, there's a chapter 4 in the general report, which would encourage the honorable members and honorable chair to look at it, which then focus on the key service, on the outcomes of the key service delivery departments, which includes health, education, human settlement, just to name a few. So in that chapter, the chapter from page 81, there is a chapter that deals with infrastructure, because as the office of the AGSA, we actually look at infrastructure in those service delivery departments. We then consolidated all the findings into one chapter. From page 102, we then have the sector message, and that chapter is specifically talking to the message within the. So the message in the GR is similar to the message that I'll be tabling today. So if we start at the overall audit outcomes of the sector as a whole, the message that we are seeing with the sector is the fact that the leadership is not implementing recommendations that we have been raising over the years, which is then leading to a lack of improvement in the overall audit outcomes. If you look at the top left, which is the graphic that shows 5 years, over the 5 years, the sector is fairly stagnant, and specifically when you look at the 2019-20 and the 2020-2021 financial years. Even the fact that, despite the fact that Northwest did improve from 2021, there was a regression in Limpopo, and then that left the sector remaining stagnant. And from our side, I think the message that we are saying is there is really no movement within the sector, and this is attributed to the fact that the leadership is not implementing the recommendations that we've been giving them over the years. What we really also want to commend the Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Northwest and Western Cape that for submitting financial statements that were full of material misstatement. And this from the sector, it's really a very good milestone for them to achieve. So our messages to those provinces was that they need to ensure that they continue implementing the controls to ensure that they maintain the outcome. And at the same time, also share the controls that they've been implementing with the rest of the sector to get the rest of the sector into a position where the financial statements that they submit for audit are free of material misstatements. of concern, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, this morning, what we are noting the provinces of KZN and Northern Cape. If you look at the graphic, over the 5 years, those two provinces has remained the same in the qualified category. And when we were really unpacking and engaging with the provinces, we actually noted the fact that in those two provinces specifically, there were two critical posts that have been vacant for the past 5 years. With the Northern Cape is the HOD, the position really has been vacant, and they've been appointing acting officials, and with KZN is the CFO post. So when you look at the fact that these two vacancies coincide with the outcome that we see today, we're able to then conclude that there are two vacancies are directly contributing to the fact that the two provinces are not moving. So that is the message that we then gave to them, to the sector. At the bottom of the slides, we are then focusing on the outcomes of the audit of the predetermined objectives. I think one thing that I want to highlight to the committee this morning is at the bottom left, there is a graphic that shows the audit outcomes. I also want to sort of bring context to the audit outcomes that we see today. So currently, the Office of the AGSA does not issue an opinion on the annual performance reports. However, the picture that we see is to say, should the AGSA start issuing audit opinion, this is the picture that we're going to see. So in all these provinces that we see today, we're seeing a lot of disclaimers, which means that there's a lot of limitations that we are seeing throughout the program. The sector. And one thing we really want to highlight is the audit, the program that the sector had selected in this area was Program 2, which is District Health Service. And according to our understanding, this is one of the core programs of the sector. So the message that we are really saying is we are concerned as the Office of the AGSA that there's been a number of limitations noted in this program to the point that we are unable to confirm whether the targets achieved that are being reported are whether they are reliable or not. So the message to the sector is to say they need to really work on their processes around the record keeping. We noted that the main root cause in this program is record keeping. And one of the basic findings we're raising is the reconciliation, where for them to be able to report in the annual performance report, there need to be reconciliation between the source documents and the various registers that they have within the facilities to the actual system. So if that basic reconciliation that it's not working correctly, this then is resulting in the limitations that we are then reporting today. So for us, we then also highlighted the impact of not being able to then have credible performance data, because this is the data that the sector utilizes for decision-making purposes. So if you look at the chapter 4 in the GR, we did unpack the with an example of what this means to the sector. So from my side, I think the message that we have in this section is to say, because of the lack of implementation of our recommendations, the sector is not improving audit outcomes. The next section that we are going to focus on was the section around the compliance. We are still raising concerns regarding the increase in the unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure within the sector. And this is really due to the fact that the sector is not complying to the set laws and regulations issued by National Treasury. And what I want to highlight first is the unauthorized expenditure. And authorized expenditure, we note that Eastern Cape is the biggest contributor to the unauthorized expenditure in the current year and also compared to the prior year. And the impact that came from Eastern Cape is the fact that they had unauthorized expenditure relating to the medical legal claims. You would also pick up in the general report, we did indicate the fact that in the prior year, Eastern Cape had to pay medical legal claims from the existing budget, because they had not budgeted for medical legal claims. Eastern Cape is one of the provinces that really contributed significantly to the payment of the medical legal claims. Then when you look at the irregular expenditure and the fruitless and wasteful, the biggest contributing province become Gauteng. And the biggest transactions that resulted in this were transactions that resulted in the non-compliance around the PPE. The committee will recall that last year when we were tabling, or the year before when we tabled the special report one, there were a number of findings around PPE that were reported within the Gauteng Department of Health. So even when you look at the picture within the sector, they are actually the ones that have the biggest contributing factor. So the message here is the fact that because we are seeing an increase over the years, there seem to be a lack of implementation of consequence management within the sector. And the lack of implementation of the consequence management is resulting in a situation where if the perpetrators are not held accountable, the habit continues of the officials not complying with them. Laws and regulation. So the message we then send to the sector is to say they need to really start holding accountable the different officials that are involved in the non-compliance with laws and regulation. Another focus area, as indicated earlier by Mr. Sekgetho, was the current pressure in the health sector. And I think this also is the area that the committee members would have seen in the media with the different reports relating to the financial difficulties that the sector is going through. From our side as the Office of AGSA, we are also very concerned with the current financial situations that the department is faced with. And we do understand the fact that when the pandemic came, the department had to readjust and realign some of the activities to do with the pandemic. However, this really did put pressure on the already financial health situation that was under pressure. So what we are showing on the top left of the slide is the appropriation that was set for the 2021-22. And this appropriation excludes the payments for compensation of employees as well as transfers. So this is mainly appropriation for goods and services and expenditure for capital assets, which is really the core of the service delivery. So in the 21-22 year, there was a total of 88 billion that was already appropriated to the sector. However, as at the year end of 31 March 2021, already 15 billion of that 88 billion was already committed to accruals. So which means the fact that as at year end, the department had already received goods and services or that were equating to 15 billion and they had not paid it. So that meant that 17% of the next year appropriation was already committed. This then places challenges to the sector to then deliver the service because they're already starting the year with 17% less of the amount that they're supposed to utilize for service delivery. The last block then shows the current claims against the department. The biggest contributing to the claims is the medical legal claims. So these claims have not yet materialized. So the picture we're trying to show is to say, should all these claims materialize, it's really going to put the sector in a position where they will not be able to render the services. So that's the message that we are then saying, to say the sector really needs to work around processes of dealing with the current medical legal claims within the system. I think a case in point that we also had was, for example, in Eastern Cape, where in the prior year, they paid about 900 million only to medical legal claims. And that's money that was originally earmarked for service delivery now going to medical legal claims. In the whole sector in total, they paid 1.7 billion. So from us, we are raising it as an alert to say the current medical legal claim situation that is currently in the sector is having an impact on the already strained budget that was sitting in the sector. And the impact of this strain, we're starting to see it even in some of the infrastructure projects that the sector is currently working on. For example, you find a situation where a facility has been successfully completed and commissioned, but they cannot necessarily utilize the facility because they don't have the budget for personnel. So what we're saying is that there's now a spillover effect of the pressure towards the current system. So what we're also indicating in this slide is also the material irregularities, because with this loss, some of this loss resulted in us reporting material irregularities within the sector. So for the 2020-21, we identified 33 instances of material irregularities. And at the point of reporting at the 31st of March 2021, we had confirmed 15 of those material irregularities. The table at the bottom right unpacks the 15 MIs that we have reported. And I think of note, if just recall or remind the committee on the fact that when there's material irregularities, because there's then a likely loss or already loss that has occurred, and we are then reporting 94 million that is of the loss that has already occurred within the sector. When we unpack the 94 million of the loss, there is a big chunk that then relates to the interest that the sector is being charged by the suppliers. So because of the existing challenges within the with their finances, they are unable to then settle the invoices on time. And those service providers are starting to then charge interest on the sector, which is further aggravating the situation under financial health. The other impact that we saw is in infrastructure, where because they can't settle some of the invoices for the contractors, some of these projects are then suspended. However, because the some of these machines were actually committed to the project, they are then being charged spending time for all those or equipment. So what we are saying is the current situation, financial situation of the sector, really requires an immediate action by the sector so that the sector is able to continue rendering services and meeting their mandate. The last slide under the sector messages is just unpicking the infrastructure assets. As indicated earlier in chapter 4 of the GR, there is a report around the infrastructure assets. And in there is a good examples that we've also included that impacts the health sector. So infrastructure is one of the focus areas that we've been looking at over the years, and we've been reporting to this committee on the outcomes. So for the year 2020-2021, there were 23 projects that we selected across the provinces. And then the main findings that came through have been categorized into three areas. We have findings relating to time, and under time, this really talks to the significant delays that are being experienced with finalizing this project. And I think if you go to the GR, there's an example we then gave of pilonomy, which I think that the hospital has been taken 4 years for them to complete. And the impact of these projects not finalizing is because now the service delivery, the citizens themselves are forced to go to look for other facilities that may be actually further away from the patient residence just to get service delivery. So the contributing factors that we've noted under the delays are mainly due to poor management of milestones by the department, poor performance of contractors, and the poor project planning by the department. So the message that we then provided to the sector is to say they need to ensure that they improve their monitoring activities to ensure that all these projects are then finalized. Another area that we're reporting with findings around cost, and mainly the contribution of cost is if there are significant delays, they are then costs that they start incurring on the delays in the projects. But there's also instances where the contracts themselves, there is some deficiencies in the work itself. So some of the costs then is impacted by the build quality that we find on the ground. So then that escalates the cost of the project. And once again, in the GR, we have a very good examples of a cost of a facility that increased by 61% because of some of the delays. Under the build qualities, what I've indicated earlier, these are instances where the contractor they have appointed did not build according to quality. And therefore, what that means is either the departments are forced to look for another contractor to come and finish the work. And in those instances, then there's additional costs that are being incurred by the sector to make sure that these projects are finalized. So this is the end of my slides around the health sector. I'm gonna go quickly jump into the vaccine work that we did. So when we then move into the vaccines, I think Mr. Schetto really has really set the tone around the work that we have done. So based on the work that we have done in the value chain, we chose specific focus areas that we are going to focus on. And for each focus area, we determine what kind of messages we would want to give to the sector or to management at the end of the project. So the slides that I'm going to be presenting are set according to the specific section of the value chain, and we cover where we start with the message that we wanted to give. We then focus on the observations of findings and the conclusion in that specific focus area. So the first focus area that I'm going to look at is the planning. And in the planning, when we were looking at the value chain, we really wanted to assess whether the department developed and implemented adequate plans for the implementation of the rollout, and whether government as a whole has established different structures that will allow for efficient communication within the different spheres of government. So the work that we done was mainly looking at the processes and procedures that have been established. Our observations in this area was the fact that there was planning documents that were developed and implemented. There were also structures that were established that were assisting with the coordinations, and there was a lot of guidance that were provided to the site. So we are acknowledging the fact that there were some teething challenges with the planning. However, one thing that we actually observed was that the department was able to quickly amend or change the plan to align to the changes that was then taking place. I think a case in point that we are highlighting here is the challenges that they had with the AstraZeneca, where at the point AstraZeneca was then received, it was then concluded that it's not suitable for the Delta variant. And we really do commend management for being able to swiftly resell the AstraZeneca to ensure that there's not losses. So, and also then introduce the Sisonke program. So in the planning area, our observation is that management really, they did put in place policy and procedures, and they did leverage in their current policy and procedures with the current vaccination program within the sector. And in instances where they were changing, management were able to then quickly amend their plans to suit the situation. Another area that we then focus on from the vaccine point of view was the funding and the goods receipt section. In the funding, we really wanted to assess that there was sufficient budget available that was made by the National Treasury to ensure that the vaccines and the related services are procured, and the fact that all monies that have been spent on the vaccines and sold to private sectors are actually then the monies is recouped. In this area, unfortunately, because of some of the processes that are not yet implemented, we were not able to focus on the recoupment or the reimbursement. We have then postponed that focus area into the normal audit that is currently underway. So that focus area, the team on the ground is following up to see the processes that management has implemented around the recoupment of the vaccines. Another focus area that we then looked at around goods and services, we really wanted to assess whether goods and services that were procured and paid were actually received, and the fact that appropriate vaccines were actually received. Our observations in this area, if I start with the finding, was the fact that there was, as at the 31st of August, we were able to confirm that there was 12.93 billion that has been allocated. I think one thing I want to say about the budget is we do know the fact that over and above allocation at national level, the provinces themselves were reprioritizing some of the funds to make sure that they are able to implement the vaccine rollout. So our conclusion in that area was that there was sufficient budget at the time for the rollout. Under goods and services, what we actually observed is that as of 31st of August, 80% of the doses committed by Pfizer were received, as opposed to 30% of those that were committed by Johnson & Johnson. So from our side, we then raised a remaining risk to the department to say the first risk is because this contract that was signed with international service providers with foreign currency, the management needs to be aware that there is a possibility with the fluctuation of the exchange rate, there's a possibility that they might actually spend more than what they had originally budgeted for those contracts. So from our side, we raise a risk to say they need to monitor and already get some guidance from Treasury on how to then deal with the situation where they are ending spending more than their budget because of the exchange rate differences. Another risk that we then raised with them was the fact that they need to monitor Johnson & Johnson COVAX to ensure that they do deliver as committed. Our conclusion in this area, as I said before, was that there was sufficient budget at the time for the vaccine rollout. And we also then highlighted the fact that they need to make sure that they monitor the service providers so that they then render the services committed. Another area that we focused on was in the procurement. And the main focus for this procurement was to ensure the fact that procurement for vaccines and related services was in line with the applicable laws and regulations, and the fact that all contracts were effectively managed to ensure that goods and services that were paid for have been received, and to also ensure that they are actually monitoring the performance of the supplier. The last two focus areas I've already addressed in the previous slides, as we observed with the delivery of the vaccines. So the rest of the slides will then deal with the procurement. So for the procurement, we mainly focused on the National Department of Health, because they are the ones that were responsible for procuring the vaccine. If the committee members will recall, the approach that the Department of Health had implemented was to say they would then they obtained the approval deviation from National Treasury to procure the vaccines. And then initially they had also a deviation for the logistics. However, after a while, they then issued a tender for the logistics. So the findings that we are taking today are for both the transactions. So when we look at the deviation for the procurement of vaccines themselves, under the findings, we are raising possible non-compliance that we noted. And this is non-compliance relating to tax matters and interest, declaration of interest matters that we noted with the international service providers, which was the COVAX and the and the Pfizer. When we move to the findings relating to the logistics, the three bullets under the findings were specifically for that. So with, when they then took out the tender on logistics, what we noted is they did not include a subcontracting criteria as required by the regulation. So to ensure the fact that, or to provide guidance to the bidders on how the subcontracting would then be dealt with. So when we then inspected the tenders, we realized that that criteria was not included, which then resulted in the bidders using their own judgment on subcontracting. The other focus finding that we noted was around the functionality criteria that was then included. The functionality was not clearly defined to indicate, for example, what a one mean or two mean. And that the assessment was then left to the evaluators themselves to allocate the different functionality criteria. Another point that we then raised is around the evidence around the issuing of the awarding of the contract. So in the original tender, they had intended to award the contract to one service provider, and they already included a criteria that indicated that should the winning bidder not able to deliver, they reserve the right to then award the bid to the second or the second highest scoring bidder. Unfortunately, due to the different changes, the management then decided to actually award the bid to more than one supplier on our side. We were then requesting evidence on the thought process behind them making the decision. And at the time of the report, the evidence was not provided to us. When we move to the observations, as indicated by Mr. Sikhato, observations are usually areas where we are saying it's not necessarily non-adherence, but there are also possible risks that management should be aware of. The first area was around price negotiations, because they then awarded the bid to two service providers. We noted that the second highest scoring bidder had a price significantly higher than the winning bidder. So what we're raising to say, there was an opportunity for them to negotiate the price with the second highest bidder to reduce the prices. Another area that we then highlighted was the inconsistency scoring of the functionality. And this is linked to the finding we raised around the subjective functionality. So because the functionality scoring was very subjective, there was some instant inconsistencies we noted with the BEC that we felt that the adjudication committee should have picked it up and addressed it accordingly. The last area on observation was around the possible collusive bidding. In one of our tests that we do, we actually assess we also assess the interest of the directors. So what we noted is there are some directors in the different bidders that are actually related, and then we raised the fact that there could have been possible collusive bidding, and the department did not actually pick it up. So we then said that management must go back and relook at the possible collusive bidding that could have second place. So the conclusion in this area is really to say, when we tabled the outcomes in November, we did highlight the fact that there is still some gaps we identified with the procurement in the National Department of Health, where the end users are involved with the procurement without or with limited assistance from the SCM unit. The root causes or the findings that we're noting in this presentation, it's similar to the same root cause where the department on the unit for affordable medicines was the one that was responsible for the procurement. And I think due to the limited knowledge within the unit, some of the criteria were not necessarily met, resulting in the findings that we are seeing today. So the recommendation that we raised with the department and we also shared with the committee in October is the same recommendation to them to say the national government needs to really ensure that supply chain management processes are done by the supply chain management unit itself. So the other area, the final area that we looked at was around the implementation of the vaccine rollout itself. And in these areas, we are going to look at two parts. The first part is the administering of the vaccine itself. And the second part, we are going to look at the data capturing and the reporting. So in this slide, I'm going to cover the administering of the vaccine. And the next slide will then cover the data capturing and reporting. So the message, the plan message that we had was to look at the fact that the vaccine rollout was implemented as planned, as the planning that I indicated earlier, and as well as the fact that the government implemented reliable technological tools that supported efficient rollout. So what we observed in this area is the fact that there were areas that worked well and areas of improvement. Our colleagues from the performance audit unit, together with our colleagues from the information system auditors, they then visited about 45 sites across the province, and then they looked at specific processes that has been implemented on the vaccination sites themselves. The one thing that I also want to highlight in the areas that worked well, we're not necessarily saying all 45 vaccine sites were implemented, but a majority of those sites actually had implemented the processes. So in the areas that worked well, for example, we noted that there was sufficient infrastructure, equipment, dedicated human resource and vaccine supply in those vaccination sites that we visited. And another note that we saw with the vaccine supply itself, we did an overall assessment on how the vaccine supply was allocated across the provinces. And when we look at the allocation, we actually realized that it was fairly aligned to the populations within the specific provinces, which then says the department really planned well in how they are going to allocate the different vaccine supplies to the provinces. The areas of improvement that we highlighted the shortage of ICT equipment and poor connectivity. And this, the committee would recall that over the years, we've been reporting on control deficiencies around IT. Unfortunately, even in this time of vaccine rollout, those control deficiencies were coming through. We also noted that the areas of improvement around the storage conditions and practices where the facilities were not adhering to the prescribed to the prescripts issued by the National Department or the Provincial Department. This is also aligned to the findings that we've been raising over the years around storage conditions and practices. We also then note the areas of improvement around the stock management itself of the vaccines when it was at the facilities, that the movement of the stock was not necessarily being tracked effectively in some of the sites, which then exposes the program to possible losses. And some of the challenges were because of the stock visible system that they've implemented, where due to connectivity, the officials could not then update the system. We also highlighted challenges around the used vaccine vials that were not defaced and labels. And this is one of the risks that were raised earlier on, even during the Sonke trial, that this then opens the sector to a risk of reuse, where someone can then take the vials and fill it with water or anything else and try to resell it in the market. The area around, then we had an area around data capturing and reporting, which mainly also focus on the EVDS. One thing that we really want to commend the department of, even though there were some teething problems initially with the EVDS, but as our information system auditors were working with them and raising the findings, management was able to then go and make the necessary changes in the system to avoid the necessary risks that might have identified. So in that end, we really do commend them for them being able to swiftly make the recommendations that our teams were raising. But just to highlight some of the findings that we noted, there were issues around the changes in the systems that were logged manual or not logged on EVDS, which then raises the challenges that if we don't know what changes were made on the system, you're not able to see changes authorized. There were challenges around the back capturers. I think the committee will be aware that there were a lot of reports in the media around the back capturing, which then impacted the overall reporting by the department. Some manual forms that were being used because of the connectivity issues were not completed accurately, which then impacted the information that was then being inputted into the EVDS system as well. And then there were also some manual records that were used for the SVS system. So the conclusion in the whole implementation is that we do note the fact that there were areas that really worked well within the sector with the whole vaccine rollout program. However, there were some areas that really required improvement. And I think in the slide, we are sort of also highlighting these areas that I mentioned earlier, that these areas around storage conditions and practices really links to the findings that we've been reporting in the sector. And one of the, if the committee would recall, this is the findings that even in Special Report 1, we're raising around storage conditions of PPE and the sanitizers. So we saw the same findings that are coming through, where we are saying the sector really need to work on the controls around the implementation of the prescripts that have already been developed by the sector with regards to storage conditions and practices. And we also now also highlighting also with the healthcare waste management. This also links to one of the reports that we reported a few years ago around the healthcare waste management, where we are saying the risks that we raised then, we noticing the fact that they're not necessarily implemented and hence we're seeing the risk of some of the vials not being defaced. I think the same point I raised around the ICT, where we're saying we've been raising some of this funding around ICT, and our message to the sector is to really go back and ensure that all these recommendations that have been raised over the years, they're actually implemented within the sector. This is the last of my slides, Honorable Chair. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I'm just trying to ascertain Tabelo, whether are you completed with all of your presentations?
Yes, Honorable Chair, I was able to present all three slides presentation at the same time. So the vaccine one was the last one.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, so there we've had the presentation from the Auditor General on all three presentations, as I had mentioned in the beginning. And we have a couple of members who want to discuss your presentation with yourselves and raise some questions with you. The first one will be Honorable Munyai, because he has a doctor's appointment. I have to unfortunately put it that like that because he has requested to go first, Honorable Members. Followed by Honorable Wilson, Clark, Van Staden, Ismail, Honorable Dr. Tembakwayo, and Honorable Chirwa in that order. I'm going to repeat. Munyai, Wilson, Clark, Van Staden, Ismail, Tembakwayo, Chirwa. Please, if you can continue in that order. Thank you very much.
I've also noted my hand, Chair. My hand is up.
Thank you, Sukacha. Anyone else I had missed? Any other member? So, Honorable Sukacha, you will be the last one in that group. Thank you.
Honorable Chair and esteemed honorable members, and I think we welcome the report of the AG, and especially with respect to the intervention to support the national department and provinces. I must say, Honorable Chair, I see a lot of disclaimers in Eastern Cape, Free State, Northwest, and KwaZulu-Natal. This is a concerning issue for me. With regard to the areas where there's unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, especially where the AGs has been able to intervene to assist the department, there have to be consequence management as practical and urgent as possible, which means now, Chairperson, we should not wait for the other AG's report next year. Where there are problems that I've raised, can we please intervene, allow the executive to intervene in those areas? And we must hold the executive to account to make sure that they really take actions against those that really disregard the law or the piece of legislation and the processes that are put forward by the Treasury in line with the PFMA. So therefore, Honorable Chair, it seems there's a progress in Gauteng, regardless this adverse finding, but the areas where these disclaimers, we must zero in, Chairperson, and attend to those areas. I mean, how do people spend such a lot of money and they don't spend it next to anything to do with the vaccine or anything to do with the core health services that is required? The bed infrastructure need to be attended to. We can't wait for tomorrow. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Wilson?
Chair, sorry to just butt in, but Honorable Wilson said she has a family emergency on the group.
Thank you. Honorable Van Staden?
think it's Honorable Clark before me, Chairperson.
Honorable Clark?
Thank you very much, Chair. I have just two questions. I must agree with Member Munyai about the infrastructure problems we have in hospitals currently. We saw currently in the news the problems we have with the hospitals in Gauteng, and that is very concerning, although this committee has numerous times brought visits to the Gauteng hospitals, especially those ones that one is what is now in the news, the Charlotte Maseke Hospital and with the MFC of Gauteng. I think it was on three occasions or two occasions. And I must say we have said on that stage in that meetings we need that report, and the MFC said they have sent the reports to us. But I must say till today we haven't seen any of those reports. So that is a bit of concerning. And I think it must be so that the ministry and the executive must start to intervene in the problems we have seeing occurring in the province of Gauteng. But not only in Gauteng. Gauteng is now in the news because of a very big problems of infrastructure and overcrowding hospitals and so forth and so forth. But we know what the standard is of hospitals across the country, and it's a matter that needs to be addressed. Chairperson, on the slide 10, around the infrastructure, I've asked the minister a written question. Maybe the AG can help me on this one a month ago. And my question to him was what the total number of state hospitals were that were built or replaced in the period from 1994 to 2021. And his answer to me was that 34 hospitals were new or replaced during that period. Now, I just want to know from the AG, in your view, were there any infrastructure work done in or on these hospitals that you are reporting to us today? But that's my question. And on the question of on the vaccines, I just want to get the view of the Auditor General. But I think these questions I'm addressing now, we need to address that with an urgent basis with the department as well as the office of the minister or the minister himself. Regarding the vaccines, on March the 4th, it was reported in the media that the government was worried that they would have to destroy 100,000 doses of vaccines because of its expiry date by the 31st of March this year. Now, the Minister of Health has also indicated that even more vaccines will expire and have to be destroyed by June and July this year. And I saw you speak as slides 5 and 6 of possible overspending due to unforeseen impact of exchange rate differences and price negotiations were not performed, etc., etc. Now, did this not happen because the government's planning around the vaccines was not to be desired? And what is, in your view, the government doing now to see to it that the money paid for these millions of doses of Pfizer vaccines is not flushed down the drain? I hope the AG can provide me with answers. Otherwise, Chairperson, we must raise the same questions to the department and the minister as well. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I'm available. Sorry, I was just taking a message from Honorable Wilson about her family emergency that she had to deal with. Can I go ahead?
Yes, let us also wish Honorable Wilson well as she's dealing with this emergency. And I'm not going to name the challenge that she is having now on this platform, but we wish her and the family well. Please go ahead, Honorable Clark.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I have been partly covered with some of the questions. But, you know, Chairperson, in my view, you know, provinces like KZN and the Northern Cape, you know, we as a committee must insist that these departments appear in front of the committee because they do not comply to the AG's recommendations year on year. And I must say to you, I've done a couple of oversight visits now in the last couple of weeks on the ground. And what I do discover is working conditions, shortage of staff, the ability of management to advise and advertise and full funded posts, systems in terms of record keeping on old manual filing systems are chaotic. And these are the sort of critical issues that the AG has also mentioned in his report. So, you know, we live in a world with smart technology, and I think we really need to be moving into that era when it comes to record keeping and so forth. And then, of course, the unexpenditure that we see and the irregular, the unauthorized expenditure and irregular expenditure, especially in Gauteng. You know, these guys must come to the committee and come account for these issues year in and year out. The AGs recommends this, and no consequence management is put in. Ignored, wasteful expenditure need to be dealt with in terms of consequences, and what steps have been put in place to deal with this continues in year and year out. And obviously they need to come and give us a plan how they're going to mitigate this kind of behavior. You know, and then with
Honorable Clark,
yes.
Honorable Clark, we are struggling to hear you. I gave you a chance because I think in between, I'm sure the representatives of the AG can understand what you're asking. But let's give it another chance now from accruals today. See if it's
okay. Can you hear me better now, Chairperson?
That's a bit better, thank you.
Then also, you know, in terms of the accruals and particularly the medico claims, I would like to know whether the medico claims form part of the annual budget of the health budget. In terms of having to pay out these millions and millions of rands. I also would like to know that if the lawyers that are appointed by the state that deal with these claims, is there a certain criteria set out to them by the law society in terms of what they're allowed to charge and what they're not allowed to charge? Because it seems like these costs are being incredibly inflated. And I'm sure, you know, in terms of the law society, there must be a guideline as to say this is what you're allowed to charge and this is what you're not allowed to charge. And then in terms of contractors that are awarded, I mean, in terms of infrastructure, are there no performance indicators within these contracts, where if contractors do not perform, they are not paid, they are slapped with hefty penalties because they do not comply with the contract in the specific time frame? Do we not check to see whether our contractors that we are using are blacklisted? Are they screened before they are appointed? Because I can tell you, we have a construction company for 35 years. And if we qualify for contract, if we don't perform within the requirement agreements within that contract, we are slapped with penalties for that. You know, we're not kicked off site and then you are spending millions to redo the contract. We are screened and verified, and penalties are imposed on us. And does that not happen to our contractors that build our infrastructure within government? Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to everybody. Thank you for your presentation to the AG. While I've been partly covered by my colleagues, I just want to highlight a few other issues. One is that I don't see any report on the no-fault compensation fund. Now, you know, this is something that should have been somewhere, included in the report of vaccines, because we know that residents, you know, the communities out there actually don't know how to access these. And, we're not getting a full report from the minister and the department on this as well. I was hoping that we would see something of this included in, you know, your report. The issues of, infrastructure and, the terrible effect it's having on service delivery. I think, as my colleague stated, you know, it's not only the infrastructure in Gauteng, it's all over the country. But obviously, we're also looking at, shortage of beds, shortage of staff. And I think these are critical issues that, somewhere, you know, we need to have some consequence management to say leadership mistake be taken to task to say, you know what, the reality is the impact is on the ground. And by just having, you know, reports and saying this must be done or that must be done, but there's no proper consequence management on the ground to ensure that is, you know, these are overcome so that we have effective service delivery is something that we need to really highlight and escalate to a large extent. Now, the issue on the EBDS system and, you know, with proper stats regarding, you know, vaccine rollouts and, you know, the amount of people that have been vaccinated, et cetera, you know, the issues of the EBDS system has been plentiful, if I can put it that way. I was inundated by, you know, with calls and emails, et cetera, to say, you know, we've done our initial, you know, vaccinations. We did the second, we even did a third booster. But now that we, you know, we have an issue because when we're getting our certificates, everything is not actually registered on there. And this has had, you know, a major impact overall on quite a lot of people that actually needed to access, you know, into the country or out of the country. And I'm just worried, you know, that this whole statistics that we are looking at is actually, you know, incorrect. I mean, we've seen daily stats coming in, and then after a week or so, we say, you know what, due to a backlog, suddenly, you know, this is a difference in the stats. So I'm really, really worried about our, you know, our statistics, you know, and the fact that I know you stated there that you've highlighted these things to the department and certain things have been corrected, but I'm just not sure how or to what extent these have actually been corrected. You know, if it's not where, you know, a certain person reaches out to any one of us as members of parliament, and we then highlight to the national department, they are actually stranded because they don't know what to do because of the, you know, the requirements at that particular time for compliance matters to enter the country or exit the country. Now, my third issue is that I note, you know, a report from you on the vaccines, and I haven't seen anything in the report that says any money spent or any money is wasted on awareness campaigns when it came to, you know, vaccines and, you know, the issues around vaccines and, you know, the need to vaccinate. You know, these empowerment programs that we actually had in place, you know, we had vaccine education campaigns and awareness programs. But the fact is that so much of this money has actually been stolen or allegations of theft, especially with the digital vibes issue. And, you know, there's been no mention of this. So I just wanted your view on that. Now, you know, I've seen your report and you've stated clearly those that has adverse findings, etc. Now, I know you as the AG, you know, as department say, you know, you provide recommendations to the department, you know, to address these issues, but really there must be some consequence management strategies in place for leadership to effect the necessary changes. Now, I know you'll say we're the Oversight Portfolio Committee and we should be holding the, you know, the executive to account, but from you as the, you know, the AG's department, I mean, really this can't be going on for more than 5 years. There must be some tool that can be, you know, implemented or used to effectively get the change on the ground or effectively get the change from leadership to provinces to make sure that these are actually eliminated in future. Now, you know, I'm also really very worried. The fact that, you know, first of all, the AstraZeneca was bought suddenly, you know, we are told that, you know, at the country is so much of AstraZeneca. And then we found that, you know, the expiry dates were soon and we had to then get rid of that as a country. And now, currently, I mean, we have 100,000 Pfizer vaccines that are going to be basically, you know, reaching its end. You know, I mean, the expiry date is there. And this will obviously have major impact on wastage of funds, whereas these funds could be properly utilized, you know, elsewhere, actually in the health sector. I mean, if you're just looking at the amount of comm service doctors and nurses that are being laid off right now, when we actually meeting with, you know, the different hospitals at our oversight visits, they're crying out to say, you know what, we really need these comm service doctors in our normal running of our hospitals, and it's really impacting service delivery. So I won't speak too much on the accruals and medical claims. I think my colleague has already touched on it. So thank you, Chair. I think that will be all for me.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the AG's presentations. I've got a few questions. The first question, every time when the AG presents, there are a number of negative issues against the NDOH. Even today, the same has been repeated, specifically with reference to non-compliance with the criteria, the subcontracting criteria not included, inadequate evidence provided to support the applications of objective criteria to award contracts to the bidders who did not obtain highest score, and amongst others, the inconsistent functionality. What is the AG's recommendation on what should happen to hold the executive accountable with specific reference to NDOH? Please, I think it's high time that something very strict must be recommended here, and a turnaround time also be provided to us to say this is what would happen and during this period. And during the presentation, a mention was made of the incomplete projects handed over to the new contractors to continue with the project, as easy as all that. My question is, what is your recommendation for the recovery of the money paid to the previous contractor? Because I believe it cannot just be a swift changeover from one contractor to the second contractor, because it has financial implications. What is your recommendations pertaining to accountability and bringing those found guilty of disposing used vials not defaced, or the labels not removed before disposals as prescribed by policies and procedures? And the last one, pertaining to the EVDS shortcomings, what is your recommended turnaround time of the improvement of the system? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. And the AG, thank you so much for your presentation. I have questions and comments, and if I digress, please allow for that to happen. It's part of my comments as well. Firstly, I want to request from the AG that they, if it's possible, to make the report, Chairperson, through you, that was compiled and completed in August, that wasn't made public. If it's possible that we get access to it as the portfolio committee, and also how soon this can happen. And secondly, I'm happy you raised the imminent procedure the department should have followed, or should have ideally followed, in the budget aspect, particularly. Part and parcel for Enrola strategies is educating communities, and you also capture this, maybe not in the exact words, but you capture the issue of education on why they should take vaccines as part of strategizing to roll out a vaccine program, to which the department failed dismally, as vital questions by people were not answered. The relationship between Bill Gates, Johnson & Johnson, and our bias in their favor, trials not being correctly termed as trials by the department, non-disclosure agreements, issues between Pfizer and our government, and other issues which culminated in subsequently making hesitancy and interest and trust in the government, an issue. And I appreciate that particular aspect in the presentation, as whatever attempts the minister and his department will try to evade accountability on uptake of vaccines, that is not how we had envisioned it, will fall squarely on their shoulders. And mandates won't necessarily save them from their poor and lazy work in this particular regard. They failed to educate, failed to inform our people all the information, and willingly kept some of it. With some of these agreements with pharmaceutical companies, with the intent of protecting them and not our people or our integrity, we were bullied to take up and monopolize the same vaccine from Bill Gates, who also funds SAPRA. And these matters were raised and are particularly important in this discussion because they are the backdrop of sustained hesitancy and a mistrust towards the government, and the executive. Too much misinformation and lack of transparency has dire consequences, as we can see and have been able to see every single year with every single report by the AG. Number three, the minister and the department are well aware of the situation in the Eastern Cape. This committee already prompted to the minister, when he was still deputizing Dr. Zweli Mkhize, to put the province under administration. and make valuable inroads in addressing the crisis that's happening in that province and other provinces as well. You know, there just isn't a political will and or commitment. And the minister must actually come to this committee and appraise us on why they refuse to intervene in Eastern Cape after years and years of regression and obviously other inland issues in other provinces that's raised by the AG that have been the case for over 5 years and some for 5 years. That's absolutely unacceptable. You know, beyond these issues being sustained, it means that they are, that is the intention, if they're not being resolved, when there is capacity to resolve them and there are recommendations and there are solutions from both the portfolio committee and the AG as well. And to the AG, I want to know, what are these findings that you speak of? I think it was in the first part of your presentation on program two that you made regarding the NHI, which they were able to resolve. Can you just appraise on those particular findings that you speak of? I mean, I think as the portfolio committee, we know that these recommendations are repetitive. And we get this each and every year. You know, although the AG is doing its work, the general populace must accept that the government of the day is willingly choosing to fail, as recommendations and consistent attempts to hold the department accountable falls flat with literally every year. How else does the AG, you know, because I think that's my concern now, how else does the AG work to ensure that recommendations are fulfilled by the department? And at the end of the day, you know, the AGSA is the Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa. What other methods are you considering to explore in ensuring that your recommendations are implemented? And what are challenges in this particular regard? You know, and I know, we work together and all of that, but I want to know like a more tangible way of ensuring like a workable relationship between the AG and the portfolio committee. I think I even said this in the previous time when the AG was here. The other question, is there an updated version of the rate of delivery by Johnson & Johnson to date? I'm noting in the low percentage as per the presentation, and it's actually concerning. That this was the case in August last year when issues regarding which countries are prioritized, you know, and the issues of vaccines and accessibility to Africa and all of those issues were actually, confronted in the previous year. I want to know more information. If you have the information, otherwise we'll work with this particular information and raise it with the minister directly. And I also want to know if there's a view or analysis by the AG on whether the department did or didn't over-procure vaccines. Noting the issue of rollout strategies by provinces, or that provinces already had their rollout strategies, majority of them were not even able to, you know, live up to those strategies on paper. You know, the capacity to carry throughout the vaccination program, was there a relationship between what was procured and what was planned and prepared to be administered for, you know, noting all the other issues you mentioned, the issue of education, the issue of EVDs, the issue of ICT systems and all of that, and whatever was not done, and the issue of hesitancy and education and prevention, and the issue of our primary healthcare facilities. Is there a possibility that the department over-procured vaccines and didn't prepare the ground for ensuring that the number of the vaccines that they procured was actually prepared for to be rolled out? I'm asking this particular thing because, you know, I know the department, if that is the case, the department is going to be dodgy about this particular thing. And there's already elements of this kind of thing starting to happen, but that's a conversation for another day in regards to vaccine mandates and stuff like that. And second last question on the ICT crisis, what are the recommendations from the AG to address this particular thing? How does it affect the current information system as our disposal regarding the numbers we see of vaccination? I'm asking this because we had made a recommendation to the minister when I was still Minister Zweli Mkhize, very early 2020, I think in March, on developing region-based and district-based operational systems to deal with the crisis of ICT and information and capturing of information, to which the recommendation was not taken up. I think there needs to be more in-depth information on this particular thing of ICTs, like you had done with the digital vibes issue when it was first brought up later that very same year. I don't know. I feel like the AG can give us more information on the issue of procurement of the tendering process? Was it a project that was tendered to a particular company? I want to know all those details regarding, especially because there's a crisis of ICT, which means it wasn't capacitated. And if there was a company that was supplying or dealing with the process or the project, I think we'd like to know as the portfolio committee. It would only make sense because you were able to give us information on the issue of digital vibes before it was even, you know, an interest of the media when there were other intentions by the president. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the report from the AG done by Mr. Sekgeto and Ms. Thabelo Musisinyane. Just a few questions, Chair, from my side. The first one, it's just a concern that we've got about five provinces that got a disclaimer of an audit opinion and one adverse, which is a real concern to me. I'm just interested, Chair, is there any recommendation that the AG have made in this regard? Because the AG has also linked the KZN and the Northern Cape for not appointing a CFO and an HOD respectively. But what is the and that has also affected the number of programs and policies and processes of the department. Is there any recommendation, specific recommendation that the AG has made to hold somebody accountable? Because somebody must have looked at this thing and appointed those key positions, and CFO and HOD are very key to a department. The second one, Chair, the AG has also mentioned that provinces have not concluded their APPs. Is it all provinces or is it specific provinces? And what is the reason for that? And then the third one, Chairperson, is on material irregularities. I just want to check, Chair, does the AG have powers to make criminal recommendations? And if the AG does, is there any criminal recommendation that the AG have made in its findings on the national department and even the provinces? Then the next one, Chair, on additional amounts on infrastructure. The AG has mentioned Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. And those are huge amounts that the AG have indicated on additional amounts. Is there any recommendation on consequence management that the AG have made that should be taken? And then my last one, Chair, is on the issue of the disposal of vaccines. Vaccine vials. And the AG has specifically mentioned that there is non-adherence to the prescribed procedures. And the AG mentioned that that has been done for, it may be done with an intention to reuse those vaccine vials. And that can be also linked to fraudulent intentions. Any recommendations, specific recommendations on criminal action that needs to be taken, made by the AG? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. There is a follow-up question from Honourable Clark before I allow the AG to give any answers to your questions, and I would also raise a few questions. Anyone else who wants to do a follow-up question before I ask my questions or put any points to the AG and allow them to reply? Honourable Clark, you're next, and if there's anyone else, you can indicate now. Only one question each.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to know how many appointees were made that did not comply to the price negotiations in terms of the vaccine, aligned to the second highest bidder scorer. And what was the regular expenditure around that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Clark. I want to talk about 3 points, and it speaks to 3 slides, and it's slides 7, 9, and 10. And the first one speaks on your the double art sector messages, the second one on solutions to the accruals, and also on that slide on material irregularities, and slide 10 with regard to infrastructure delivery. So on the first one on the BRRR sector messages, you would be aware that performance indicators are a primary concern for us as a portfolio committee on health. Now you've spoken about counting, for example, here who would get an adverse finding, and also a number of departments would be receiving disclaimers or qualified audits. What are those stratification systems which you use in order for you to get to an indication such as this? And when one sees these performance indicators, one also sees there are some provinces who are doing better. For example, in this case where you mentioned the Western Cape, would you be able to tell us what is different between these different departments and provinces? And then, as I said, on the accruals, you know, the question would be always when there is a difficulty, one must ask what is the solution and what is the possible solution to the accruals. We keep on talking about it and lamenting about it, and it just continues to increase. And surely there must be an intervention that would assist in managing the accruals in the provinces. And then also on material irregularities, where we have seen Northwest having a 35.4 billion rand material irregularities, followed by Free State at 17.8 billion rand and KZN at 13.1 billion rand. Would you be able to give us more details? And if it's too much detail for the meeting, you're also very welcome to write to us and also to indicate over how many financial years are we talking about here. And then in slide 10, with regards to infrastructure delivery, you are mentioning poor project management. You're highlighting it actually. So again, consequence management, and it was raised by another honorable member, I think Honorable Dr. Tembakwayo, about poor project planning for the provincial department. So what are those consequences in terms of that? And bearing in mind that additional charges are accrued due to poor workmanship in a number of projects, and then remedial work needs to be done and extra costs are incurred. Now, are those costs claimed back, for example, from the original service provider? And is there a system in place where this can actually be done? And are those contractors who do poor work placed on any form of a blacklist nationally or provincially? And I think these are some of the core things which we need to address, as mentioned by the members of the portfolio committee. Thank you very much. I think those are all the points we wanted to raise. I see the hand of Honorable Sukacha. Honorable Sukacha, is that a follow-up question?
Yes, so I'm definitely very sorry, Chair. I'm very sorry to ask.
Very welcome.
Yeah, it's just one, because you have just triggered something on my mind, the issue of accruals. This thing, Chair, has been coming for a long time. If you look at the accruals, it's huge amounts of monies, more or less in all departments. What can the AG just explain to us what might be the problem? Might it be that the budget of the and the allocation of monies to the departments of health is inadequate? Or is it because the department cannot prioritize on their major issues that they are supposed to do? Are they using monies at wrong areas, or is their prioritization wrongly and therefore using money at issues that are not their main function? What might be the issue of accruals? Because this thing is coming year in, year out, year in, year out, the issue of accruals. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much. AG, I'm guiding back to you. Thank you very much for your information you shared with us, and you are also having an insight into the understanding of the members of the Portfolio Committee and the very important questions which they have raised with you. I'm going to hand straight back to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Indeed, it is quite a lot of questions, and we appreciate them. So we'll try our best to respond. Chair, with your permission and indulgence, some of the questions entail cross-cutting or overarching concepts. So as I'll answer them, I hope that I'll address maybe some of the direct questions via talking and explaining the overall concept to address the issue. And then where I may not have covered a particular question, I will then be assisted by Ms. Thabelo Musisinyane, who will just maybe cover if there are any gaps in this regard. And members must also please feel free to have any follow-ups in case maybe we may have missed a question or maybe an input, because some of the other deliberations were also more inputs and comments rather than questions. Okay, Chair, so I'll start with, maybe let's start with the issue of accruals, Chair. So on the issue of accruals, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members would recall that a couple of years ago, the Office of the AG started focusing on, when we come to Parliament, we had a couple of slides that we show what our areas of focus would be. So we'd say we're focusing on the status of or the quality of financial statements, the quality of the performance reports, supply chain management, obviously, because we spend a lot of money as government to get things done. And then one of the focus areas was on financial health. So under financial health, what we then did as the Office of the AG, even though it's not, for example, maybe compliance driven, to say you need to get three quotations like supply chain management, and oh, you didn't get the three quotations, we still deemed it important to come and brief those charged with governance and oversight, such as yourselves, with the information. So, Honorable Chair, you would recall a couple of years ago, I think it's about 3 or 4 years ago, we also did for the members who have been on the committee for a while, we briefed the Portfolio Committee on the status of the financial health of the sector. And I know we specifically raised some concerns on the Gauteng department. So ours was to raise awareness and create and plant that seed to say there are certain problems that we're identifying here. The problems, even though there's no non-compliance, but it does stem with the ability of the institution to properly use its budget for what it had asked the budget to be used for, because we're sitting with all these high amounts of accruals. So what accruals basically means, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, if you'll indulge me, is by the time the financial year ends, which is the 31st of March, that particular department would have continued to have engaged in activities with its service providers, receiving services and goods, but not paying them. And by the time you get to the year end, you have consumed your budget, so you don't have physical cash to pay them. So you don't show it as an expense because the departments work on a cash basis of accounting. So which means they only record these things in their books once they part with the physical cash. So because they haven't parted with the cash, but the service provider was delivering the services and rendering the service and delivering the goods, you still effectively owe them. So by the time you get the next year's allocation, which is your budget that you've now asked from the legislature or the National Assembly, so that you can go and implement what you would have then committed to go and implement in the subsequent year, you first have to start off by paying these service providers in this regard. Like Thabelo was explaining, that 17% you remember on one of the slides, Chair, saying you've already charged into your next year's budget allocation before the budget year even commences. So in this particular instance, I think Honorable Sokacha also asked the question, is it a question of inadequate or insufficient budget processes or budget allocation, or is it the issue of not being able to prioritize? Honorable Chair, unfortunately, and this is just an overall arcing comment, what we found is that some of the institutions embark on other projects where the money is spent elsewhere, or because there was a leakage on a particular project that was not managed well, and now you have to recover this particular project, another project or program then ends up suffering. So this will bode well with some of the messages and some of the questions some of the members have also asked with regard to infrastructure management and the implementation of infrastructure projects. So that could be a contributing factor to the accrual situation where you had a project, you budgeted 100 rand, and then you run into problems halfway through the project. This person leaves with a 50 rand, but you can't now abandon the project because then the loss is bigger. You still require the project in order for you to deliver services. So you re-engage the services of a different service provider, but that service provider will still require their amount. So you end up maybe spending 120 on that project. So now that 20 needs to be plugged in from a different gap. So you end up compromising on other projects or other programs. And if that's not arrested, it then snowballs into the effect that we are seeing here today. And maybe I was a little bit mischievous, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, because I did mention from the Office of the AG, we have been highlighting these things to the executive to say, look, even though there may not be a specific non-compliance, but you're not using your limited resources effectively. And the root cause is you don't have proper project management. You don't have proper consequence management. Had we arrested this thing when it reared its ugly head initially 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, then we would not have seen the accumulation and the accumulation of the potential effects that we are seeing here today. So it is certainly a combination, but it is mostly driven by the implication, the consequences of all the years of all these small projects where we don't complete or we pay or we incur the loss here, fruitless and wasteful expenditure that's reported. That's because the money is gone. The money is gone. We haven't received anything. Money is paid in vain. And now we're still required to go and implement the commitments we've made to at least affect some form of service delivery. So you end up still engaging and proceeding with those commitments from the service providers, but you'll just pay them from next year's budget in this regard. But remember, for the subsequent year's budget, these institutions and departments come to Parliament and they actually make commitments for that year in terms of what they promise they will achieve and how much it will cost to achieve those particular commitments made. But already by submitting that plan, you know now as the oversight committee that they have to first deal with this particular catch-up. So will they really deliver in terms of their commitments? Those are some of the questions that we can ask, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Then also further to that, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, there was also a question related to the same topic that sought to understand whether some of our institutions out there are actually budgeting for these accruals in unauthorized expenditure. So as far as, especially in the medical legal claim environment, as far as we are aware, Chairperson, I'm speaking under correction, but remember it's now information for about 10 institutions that I have to keep in my mind. But my latest information that I had available seemed to indicate that about 8 of the 9 provinces did actually budget for these claims and medical legal claims. So there is a process where they budget, but the fact that you're putting it in your budget, you're basically saying, well, I had 100 rand available to go and implement services. But of the 100, I'm going to put 10 aside because I know I might need to pay claims and have to deal with the claims. And already it chows into, it reduces the amount that you have available to go and implement services as Tabero alluded to earlier on. So Chair, like I said, I tried to speak to some of the concepts, but now I'll try and go into a little bit more detail on some of the more specific questions. So Honorable Chairperson's question in terms of the accruals, I hope I've tried to answer that. Then on the MI questions, Chair, we will certainly provide Honorable Chairperson with that information. It is quite a bit of information. And because it is also a legal process, Chairperson, we are also a bit wary just to share information if it doesn't reach certain stages. We'll just go back and determine. But at least what we can confirm now is that the material irregularity has been raised. So in other words, the accounting officer have been notified, or the accounting officers have been notified at the minimum point in terms of the progress. But remember, just because you've notified them, they also have a right of reply because of it's a legal process that's subject to review. You want to make sure you get it right. So you want to give them with a fair chance of reply so that when they come back, you can then evaluate the information. And if they are doing something about it, you can then deal away with the material irregularity. And that'll also deal with some of the questions we were asked in terms of the material irregularity. The whole concept of a material irregularity, Honorable Chair, was to give how can I put it, push the accounting officers to take action where there's lack of consequence management. It's really to spur them into action, and where they've been given the space and the opportunity to take action and they're not doing it, then you issue the material irregularity. So it's really a last resort in terms of the audit process. But when we actually do get to that process, there's still a process for them to come back to us, give us information so that we can address, see and assess how well they are addressing the shortcoming that may have been identified. But to answer Chairperson's question more directly, we will get back to Chairperson in terms of what those MIs are and the detail that we can share, and we'll evaluate in terms of what is for public consumption at this point in time and what is not. And then we'll write to Chairperson also in terms of for which years it relates to in terms of the loss that was suffered. Then on that concept of material irregularity, whilst we edit, Honourable Chairperson, there was also a very specific and strong view around the criminal exploration of the material irregularities. Having given the brief background that I did with regard to material irregularities, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, is remember the material irregularity process was never intended to arrest people. The Office of the AG cannot arrest people, if I can call it like that, from a criminality point of view. We are auditors. We are accountants by trade and by qualification and by training. However, when we pick up a particular transaction or an instance where we feel there might be more to the transaction, we then refer it to the relevant investigative bodies that possess the necessary and prerequisite skills to then go and do the necessary investigations to determine if there was an element of criminality. To that effect, the office, as part of this process, has those arrangements with those bodies, such as the public protector, such as the SIU, etc. So we have referred a number of cases already that we've picked up where you look at the audit evidence and you have identified the non-compliance, you've identified that the state has suffered a loss, and you are not satisfied with regard to how the situation is being arrested by those accounting officers. And certainly in the various portfolios, those have been referred to the relevant investigative bodies for further investigation to go and determine criminality. Honorable Chair, we do have that information if some of the members would be interested. It was shared by Zakani in her general report that was recently tabled as recent as December in Parliament. But just to manage the expectations in that regard. So then, Honorable Chair, there was also something from Honorable Sokacha in terms of the APPs. I'm working my way backwards in terms of the list because those are the ones that are more recent in terms of the notes that I scribbled down. Honorable Sokacha, maybe just from our side, a point of clarity, those APPs have been concluded by the department. What Tabero was putting on the table was the fact that the audit work was still in progress. So the audit work, meaning our assessment and evaluation as the audit office of those plans, was still ongoing. And we hope that the work around it would be concluded by end of March. And as soon as that's then concluded, we will then issue any outcomes of that work we will share it with the portfolio committee in our submissions through the Honorable Chairperson. So it's not that they haven't concluded, the partners haven't concluded. They've concluded their work. It was us as part of the evaluation and evaluating and giving them the feedback in terms of the APP that is still ongoing and scheduled to end of March. Then there was also an issue, I think Honorable Clark raised it in terms of the price negotiations. So, and I think there was also a specific question on how many suppliers were involved. So I'll start off answering that particular question by saying, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, remember when we also embarked on our Workers Office of the AG, like I mentioned earlier on when we did the intros, ours would be relatively focused on where there's wastage and leakage, and usually that would be linked to financial resources, so at least spending. So that's obviously where our attention and focus will be, and then it will be supplemented by how well a particular project or program is then implemented and rolled out. So to give the background, and the reason I'm doing this, giving this background, is remember the vaccines themselves were subject to two main acquisition processes. The first main acquisition process was with regard to the actual purchase of the vaccines. So you go to the to whoever supplies the vaccines, you buy the vaccines, now you get the vaccine. So once you secure the vaccines, there's now the second element of saying, now I need to distribute the vaccines and make sure they get to the intended beneficiary in the area in which the beneficiary is located. So those were the two big spending patterns or trends in with regard to the vaccine rollout. The first part, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the actual acquisition. You would recall at some stage when we did the BRRR and through engagement of some of the media reports that the National Treasury played quite a big role in assisting and guiding the departments when they were doing the acquisition of the vaccines. At that particular point in time, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and the department will come in and give account for their own affairs as well at some point in time, I'm sure. But because of availability issues, the department had to take whatever was available. So from a procurement point of view, they engaged the National Treasury. They got the necessary deviations put in place. We evaluated those deviations, and we were satisfied that at that point in time, they dealt with emergency circumstances, and therefore the deviations approved by the National Treasury seemed to be reasonable and justifiable, and that allowed them to go directly to the suppliers and acquire the vaccines from the suppliers. So from that point of view, from a wastage and leakage point of view, the risk was then mitigated because of the involvement of the National Treasury and because the department was also able to go and speak directly to those particular suppliers. Then the second part, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is when the vaccines now arrived on our shores and now they were required to be distributed. So that deals with the logistics aspect of this particular program. And I think Tabero tried to sort of allude to it earlier on. However, so a lot of the work that we then did in terms of the procurement findings, a lot of those findings related actually to the processes, the procurement processes of once the vaccines had landed on our shores. In terms of the actual procurement process, and the detail is contained in the report, which just to also answer Honorable Chirwa and the Chairperson, we will share, since it's a formal parliamentary request, and we also have the distinct blessing of the minister that we will share the report. We will make it available to the committee through the office of the chairperson as soon as Friday, and then the chairperson and the secretary can make sure that it gets distributed to the members. But the detail that's contained in the report, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, there were a couple of service providers, because a specialized service that was required, they didn't get a lot of tender hits, if I can call it like that, bidders that participated in the bid. So when we speak about more than one supplier who was appointed, there was actually one, and then they appointed an additional supplier. So they explained the department, and we really understood and tried to understand where they were coming from. They explained that they were trying to mitigate the risk of capacity, just to make sure that should they appoint one person and that person doesn't have the adequate capacity, given the need and demand at that point in time, there was a need to roll it out and get the vaccine to the citizens in a speedily manner. So they wanted to make sure they were covering all their bases. However, in making that determination and assessment, Honorable Chairperson, you also still need to make sure that it is reasonable and justifiable, and it's informed by at least some form of criteria and process. So that if somebody picks up this decision that you've made, it's not subject to you being accused of having, acted in a biased manner, because you would be able to have the criteria and what you evaluated and what you assessed. So on the basis of the capacity assessment that was purported by management, we did not have that evidence at all given point in time at that time when they took the decision. So that's why we're raising it to say it is a problem for us in this regard, because obviously it may render the process unfair, because the person did a tender, they won the bid outright, they scored the highest point, so you should have awarded. Then you say, I'm mitigating a different risk, and you then act differently in terms of assigning it to an additional a service provider, but the reasons were not always clear. Then there were some questions around the infrastructure in terms of what could be done additionally. We've spoken around how the infrastructure then unfolds in the sector, some of the challenges that they face. I think there's also a good story to share here. Tabera will give a bit more details when she, or she will provide a bit more detail when she also takes the floor. Certainly, Honorable Members, Honorable Chair, the department and through the accounting officer should really look at recovery processes. It is there. It is allowed in terms of law. We should just act on it, number one. And number two, where we've acted on it, our point of reference is the Mpumalanga province, where in Mpumalanga there was a contractor where there were also challenges that were experienced, and the contractor withdrew. but not through no fault of the department, and the department then pursued recovery through the formal processes, and the money was actually recovered from this particular contractor because the accounting officer and the department did not just let it go, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. So that would be the long and short answer of that. At least come back and demonstrate to oversight and to the public out there that I've really attempted to pursue this and I tried to recover the funds. Where you were not successful in recovering the funds, let it be for reasons other than you not having pursued it. Maybe if the contractor has been liquidated or whatever other means we've explored, then at least you can then demonstrate that you've executed your fiduciary responsibility. Then, Honorable Chair, in line with what should also be done and coming back a little bit to the material irregularity, I think there's a sense of frustration that was also voiced by the honorable members in terms of the repetitive nature of some of these things. Yes, Honorable Chair, we also share the same frustrations because it puts us in a position where we are also annually putting forward the same recommendation, because if you don't address the root cause of this thing, we will tell you, go back. One of the members mentioned it, consequence management. We mentioned the action plans. What action plan should be put in place? I think it's Honorable Chirwa. What action plan should be put in place? We do recommend go back and put action plans in place to address these shortcomings to our portfolios. But it seems there's a bit of a problem in terms of the speed within which these things are implemented. And hence, the Office of the AG then implemented the material irregularities through the support and guidance of Parliament. So the wheels are turning slowly, but they are turning, and we are seeing more and more instances of where we raise the material irregularities. The accounting officers come back to us and they report that they've taken some appropriate action. And I mean, that's what we want. We want accountability and consequence management to be implemented. Unfortunately, within the health sector, that seems to be quite slow. So as part of that process, like I committed to earlier, we'll then unpack some of these MIs that we have in the sector and give the portfolio committee some further feedback in terms of the progress, what's happening, and some of the key developments insofar as the MI. But certainly also in that space, we are raising those issues. Honorable Chair, on the issue of, and I think a number of members also raised this issue on the one slide that Tabera flighted for us when she was dealing with the sector outcomes, one of the first slides of the outcomes. Chair, I think I'll ask and I'll advise that the committee maybe not look at the shock value that we've put in place. Remember, the Office of the AG does not share the outcomes or opinions on the AOPO audit. But we included it for the sector just to show you the significant challenges for the sector. So it's not a formal outcome in terms of those disclaimers and things that you saw on the screen. It's what they would have gotten had we expressed an opinion on AOPO. What is important for us, Chairperson, is to look at the block on the right-hand side with the narratives. So if the members could please do me this one favor and just look at what we've documented there. The issue we're raising, Honorable Chair, and we're trying to link it to the medical legal claims discussion, is if you are required to report legally and, in terms of your fiduciary responsibilities on your performance, so you can report accurately and completely on your performance, because the money that you would have requested from Parliament has already been spent and now you need to come and account. If you can't even do that, Chair, you'll see a lot of the programs that we've noted there, or the provinces, they have limitations. So it means they can't even support and give us information for the performance that they are reporting. But the money is spent, Chairperson. Honorable members, Honorable Chairperson, the money has been spent. But for the bulk of those provinces, when it comes to the performance information, the Office of the AG in many instances was not provided with sufficient and prerequisite supporting information. What that then means, Chairperson, is if one draws inference, and we're all just drawing inference, we're trying to link the dots and connect the dots, is it indicates that you've got a potential problem with your records management process and systems. So then we ask the question, let's go and unpack the medical legal claims a little bit further. Could it be that you actually are found wanting in the medical legal claim space because you didn't maintain proper records? You may even find that some of these cases that we keep losing and paying out these claims, that potentially we could have reduced the number of payouts had we at least had the supporting evidence to then support those cases. And that's the reason why, as the Office of the AG, also Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, in the current financial year, for the 21-22 financial year, the Office of the AG, in terms of our sector focus areas, will enhance and intensify our efforts on the issue of the medical legal claims to try and really determine what is the causal link of this thing and what is it resulting to? Because we all know, unfortunately, that it takes away from money from service earmarked for service delivery. But what is really contributing to this thing? What are the proper root causes? And can it be linked to this issue of poor and improper records management that we seem to be finding on the program for AOPO or performance information when we test? It's also worthwhile noting, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that when we test performance information as the Office of the AG for the sector, we actually select one consistent program that everybody is consistently required to have. And that program is program two. That is, I think the heading is District Health Services. And within that program, there are key indicators which we deem to be quite key and more directly linked to your service delivery mandate, and where a lot of money is also spent by the sector. So already, if you know this program, which we've been auditing for a number of years, will be subject to audit, I think you would at least try and make effort just to make sure that you try and implement processes around that program. So a lot of money directly linked to service delivery, hence its critical material and significance importance to us. That's why we select it, and that's why we then review it and assess it and audit it and give management the outcomes. So from that point of view, there is certainly a case to be made, as was made by the honorable members, that those executive authorities must come and account and explain exactly some of the shortcomings and how they're addressing those shortcomings in their respective portfolios. Maybe whilst I'm also speaking to the executive authorities, I'll address one particular question that was asked earlier on. That question was asked with regard to how we could advise the committee to better hold the executive authorities to account. Yeah, so Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, that becomes a little bit difficult. It's a bit above my pay grade, on a lighter note. Because remember, the PFMA, when we look at the PFMA against which we audit, everything is assigned to the accounting officer and the accounting authorities for public entities. We do, however, engage the executive authorities. We give them the information. We empower them. We have regular engagements with them. Before we come, 90% of the time before we come to Parliament, we would have engaged the executive authority in a particular portfolio to make them aware and alert of the issues, to give them the opportunity to also get their side, and then we come to oversight. So certainly all these issues that are raised here today have been shared with the executive authority, not only of the national department, but also the executive authorities of the provincial departments by our respective provincial colleagues. What we could recommend, Honorable Chairperson, unfortunately, the executive authority accounts to Parliament. Parliament must really explore ways in which it regularly engages the executive authority and how then it will require the executive authority to account to Parliament. To conclude that particular part of that particular topic, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, when we came to Parliament last year and we did the BRRR process, you would recall we solicited some recommendations from the portfolio committee. So we said, if you consider in a particular environment, we've identified the root causes, we've identified what they are grappling with, we've given them the recommendations of how we think they should address it to address the issue. So what we then solicit from Parliament or the portfolio committee is to say, on a quarterly basis, when the respective portfolios come and account and they come in and do quarterly reporting, ask them explicitly, accounting officer, give me your list of all the people who incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And this list, let's see what is the progress in terms of the investigations that you have made. Have a special session where you just deal with consequence management, Honorable Chairperson. It's really my advice. I saw that it works to some degree and some extent. SCOPA is one of the committees that I've also picked up that they seem to really have a big drive in this regard. So they will dedicate an entire session. We will come as Office of the AG, and we will brief them just on consequence management, irregular expenditure. We give them the contractors' names. We give them the amounts. And then from there, they go to the department and say, please tell me what you're doing about consequence management. And they will start and say, for this particular transaction number one, what are you doing? And they're actually able to find gaps in certain processes. Like, for example, there was one department that came and they said, oh, I've done consequence management, But what they had done is they'd given every single person who had incurred irregular expenditure a final written warning. And the committee said, no, but it doesn't make sense, because if you've done a proper process, because Treasury says you must do an investigation, determine what went wrong, and on the basis of that, the punishment must fit the crime. So had they done that, they would have then realized that in this list that they'd submitted to SCOPA, they had actually submitted and given everybody a final written warning, whether you had incurred irregular expenditure of 1 rand or 10 rand, or whether you had incurred irregular expenditure of 1 billion rand. So it didn't make sense. And they didn't go and investigate what were the root causes, what went wrong. Because over and above just doing the investigation, the consequence management, you are also required to go and determine what was the gap in the system so that you can close that gap and nip it in the bud and prevent similar instances of irregular expenditure from recurring. So if you don't do a proper determination, you will never understand, number one, how you should then enforce your consequence management effectively and efficiently. You will never then determine what was the real root cause of why this thing was irregular and what went wrong, and so that you can then improve and implement systems of internal control to prevent future incurrence or recurrence of the irregular expenditure. Honorable Chair, there was also a question on, and I'm trying to move as fast as I can, on the IT issue at the department raised by Honorable Chilwa. So, we've also been constantly nagging at the gate of the department with regard to the IT environment. Two things primarily. We've got a number of IT systems within the health portfolio. They have various systems. Unfortunately, these systems are not always talking to each other, and you don't always understand how they are used and what they are used for. So if they could find a way of streamlining these things and streamlining these systems, you may even find that you are able to use them for future projects. Case in point, on this particular one for the vaccines, remember the health portfolio is already supposed to have a system, IT system, that tracks the normal inoculations for other vaccines. So you have a vaccine program already, a successful vaccine program already running in our country for child immunizations and the likes. And now you come, and now you're supposed to roll out another vaccination program, and then we go and we get a different system. There may be justifiable business reasons, but I think the business reasons now at this point in time, because we have to move, are accepted. But when you take a strategic long-term step back, you actually realize that potentially we could have dealt away and not needed to develop a different system had we maybe streamlined our previous systems and treated them a little bit better and updated them a little bit better. Then there was a bit of a more direct question that was asked on the procurement of the system. Honorable Chair, honorable members, the system was actually developed in-house by the department. We give them props for that. They developed the system in-house with the assistance of the CSIR. So the CSIR was already contracted to the department for other work, and they just piggybacked of that arrangement, and they were successfully able to at least minimize the cost involved and not be exposed to any procurement shortcomings in this regard. And also, because they were developing it, they also had then the benefit of them driving the inputs and testing it themselves as and when they were going through the system. And I think that was also what facilitated the process for us to be able to give them the input so that they could go, and as they were embarking and rolling it out, also make those necessary adjustments. Granted, we still did report a couple of shortcomings, but at least from a positive point of view, they were able to respond to them. But to answer the question more directly, there was no procurement process. It was developed through an existing contract with the CSIR. Yes, there is a cost involved to it, but it's a minimal cost compared to what it would have cost had we then gone out and procured the system from a third party. And also, like I mentioned, the good work that was done around the actual development with whatever shortcomings it may currently experience. To close the question or the topic on the IT discussion, we are also planning to do some follow-up work on it. So yes, we will still do some audits on the system as part of our PFMA work. And then part of the work, Honorable Ishmael, just to also latch on to a matter that you raised earlier on, would be also to address the issue of the digital certificates. So it's more like the after-sales service process, some of the shortcomings that were identified after implementation of the system. So that is definitely on our radar. And hopefully we are in a position to give you feedback by the time we get to the BRRR process for this year, as we will incorporate that work as part of our PFMA work. Then, this name seems not to be going away, but we're happy to engage on it. It's on the digital vibes. So yes, the digital vibes is not included in here. I think from our point of view, when we looked at the costing and the risk exposure for us, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we really tried to focus on the big ticket items, being the acquisition of the vaccines and the logistics and the distribution. And then with whatever little resources we had available, we then tried to supplement, like I said, with how the vaccines were administered at facility level, just to make sure we also don't lose the essence of the service delivery implications. So looking at the awareness campaigns, compared to what they've spent compared to the overall budget procured in terms of the vaccination program, it was not material and significant, so we didn't spend our efforts on it. However, on the digital vibe specifically, I think Honorable Chair and Honorable Members would recall that the Minister did come to Parliament, or the previous Minister, and they have repeatedly at least acknowledged that the finding was picked up by the Office of the AG when they were just doing the special report process and trying to unpack the costs spent related to COVID. And we also then recommended that they do an investigation. And on the strength of that investigation, we then also collaborated, like I mentioned earlier, with the investigative body being the SIU. You'll actually see, Honorable Chairperson, on a lighter note, that my name and Ms. Thabelo Musisinyane's names are included in the SIU report there in a table where it mentions the people interviewed as part of the digital vibes investigation. And from the Office of the AG's point of view, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the whole process of doing, or the whole purpose and objective of doing material irregularity is to get people to act, to get consequences enforced, and for something to happen when something is reported. So even though from our point of view, it did not necessarily result in an MI being reported, we were satisfied at that point in time that the SIU had already undertaken the work. Remember what I mentioned earlier? When we do the MI process, either we tell the accounting officer first, we are recommending, go and do your investigations, finish your work within 6 months. They don't do that. We evaluate. We come back and we say, okay, now we are instructing you to kindly please go and do the requested actions and implement those actions. Failure of which, then we either refer, if there's a suspicion of criminality, to the investigative bodies, or if there is a clear evidence of the loss and is determined, then we give you the certificate of that, which is the last resort. But you hear, as part of our normal MI processes, we would have referred anyway. So we were more than happy when this project and the transaction was also then picked up by the SIU, and then we collaborated and provided inputs in this regard. I think I've also touched on how the MI work and what the intention is with regard to enforcement. Sure. Yeah. Then, Honorable Chair, there was also one on the changes in the vaccine supply. I think that also came up in terms of the implications of the expiration date and what is going to happen with that. One of the members, and I'm quite, when I mentioned the member's name, Chase, just in acknowledgement of the person asking the question. It's not that I'm engaging the person directly, because I know I'm supposed to say through you, Chairperson. So through you, Chairperson, Honorable Chirwa was a little bit more direct in terms of her question around the vaccine. I'll touch it along with what was raised by Honorable Ishmael as well. Honorable Chair, we certainly looked at some of the initial plans that were put in place by the department and the sector. Thabelo did give some feedback that we didn't identify any significant gaps in this regard. I think from our point of view, Honorable Chair, what makes it difficult for us to express a view on whether there was, you know, overplanned or underplanned or oversupply or poor planning is there were a set of circumstances and assumptions at a particular point in time. The planning was based on assumptions. And those assumptions, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, were also informed and driven by the scenario and the circumstances that were prevailing at that particular point in time. And there were a lot of unknowns at that point in time. So we also had to just apply ourselves and give management that latitude to say, well, you are the experts in this field. It's supported by people who are, deemed experts in this field, the SAPRAS and the other guys in terms of what can come in at what point in time. And again, you would recall, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, you are doctors, you are specialists in your field. I'm an accountant and an auditor by trade. So to the best of our ability, looking at whether those assumptions were reasonable, given the circumstances at that point in time, we didn't raise any significant issues in this regard. So the fact that subsequently, you know, there's now hesitation in terms of the uptake, and now it potentially results in these vaccines not being utilized and potentially some form of expiration and wastage. I think hindsight is the best vision. So we can't say whether they did, we can't fault them as part of the process that they engaged at that particular point in time, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. What we cannot walk away from, however, is you now sit with the information today. What are you doing about it? And that's maybe a more pertinent question that we should all be asking the officials, because if they then let it to expire, they will then certainly have to also answer tough questions from the Office of the AG in terms of the wastage and the reporting thereof, and how then we will interrogate and ask, could they have done something different? Could they have done something better? Because they knew a month ago, they now know. Likewise with the AstraZeneca one, as soon as they became aware of the problems, they then started engaging in a process of trying to resell it onwards to some of our counter colleagues in our neighboring countries, which they were able to successfully do. So they would have a tough time if they allowed this batch to expire on that basis of slow uptake, because they've already proven that when faced with this particular challenge, there are avenues to be explored, and they would need to come and demonstrate how those were explored and why they were unsuccessful if we then come to that particular point in time. So, Honorable Chair, I think I've touched on the issue of the budget for the education. The budget was there, Honorable Chair, but our focus, like I mentioned, from a materiality point of view, we focused on the acquisition and the logistic distribution. However, those transactions, because they still form part of the expenditure report of the department for the year, the PFMA year that is under review, those may form part of our sample as we do our usual or normal PFMA work. So whatever we did not cover at a particular point in time, you will at least make sure that it's included for consideration as part of our work for the normal PFMA cycle that we are going to embark on now. So that includes this follow-up, the follow-up on the vaccine, the follow-up on the IT work, and also includes the follow-up on the no-fault compensation fund that was also asked by one of the honorable members earlier on. So on that particular aspect, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, when we were doing the work as of August, there were still some legal consultations that were taking place between the sector, the portfolio, the executive authority of finance, and all these role players to try and give to affect the mechanics and the workings of the no-fault compensation fund and the respective agreements. So at that particular point in time, we then decided to give them the necessary space to go and do their consultations. But it's also something that we will then, as part of the PFMA audit, also look at how we consider it. Part of the considerations for PFMA work will also be the recoupment of the vaccine money for the citizens who were vaccinated, who have medical aid, the ones who possess medical aid. Remember, there was an understanding and an undertaking from the medical aid scheme that they will refund government for members who possess medical aid. So because we're only now recovering, we've already cut off our audit work in August, so now we're going to make sure that we don't leave that also untouched as part of the PFMA work. So there'll certainly be quite a number of things that we will need to come and follow up with you as a committee by the time we do BRRR. Hopefully, we'll have some news around this. Well, I mean, we'll always have news, whether there's a finding or we come and we tell you there are no findings, but we'll probably have to just come back and close the loop with the committee at that particular point in time. Okay, I think I've touched on the bulk of the questions. I'll just quickly audit myself and just make sure that I haven't missed something. There was something from Honorable Van Staden that was a little bit more specific on the infrastructure processes. So on the infrastructure process, the question was around the response from the executive authority indicating the 3-4 hospitals built from 1994 to 2021. So Honorable Chair, now unfortunately we don't have this information to show what the number is. When we go and we want to look at the health sector from a service delivery point of view, we look at everything when we embark on our work that we do in this regard. So if the honorable member so wishes, we could try and see if we can't get the information. But should we not be successful, I think the department is probably best placed to respond to this information. But because like I mentioned, for us, we look at everything holistically. We look at all the hospitals, we look at the state of infrastructure, we look at everything that's now currently underway. So it becomes a little bit difficult to dissect the information to that level. I hope the honorable member will at least understand that question. So we can't say whether the work that we did relates specifically to those 34 hospitals or some of the hospitals that might be pre. But I think certainly we have the list of the hospitals and the sites that we visited. We can certainly share it with the honorable member and through you, Chairperson, and the honorable member can then look at the hospitals and the list and then see whether they were built pre or post that particular point the honorable member requires. There was also something on the vials, but I think the vials issue was more around the consequence management. Tabero has adequately highlighted, honorable chair, honorable members, the risk that you're trying to bring to the attention of the sector. So say, look, they could reuse these things and then therefore be susceptible to some fraudulent activity. Now, when we mean fraudulent activity, we mean them filling them with water and then selling them onwards to people either on the black market or wherever it is. So we try to look at it really holistically to see what are the different levels of exposure, much like we would, for example, if we cover medical waste. It might be something maybe that's a little bit more specific or a little bit more, you know, ring-fenced, but we try and highlight it because of the inherent risks that it poses. So from a consequence management point of view, again, it's for the department to go and really determine who was assigned the responsibility to adequately deface or destroy these vials. And if that person didn't do their job, what is the follow-up procedures in terms of consequence management? And I know I'm oversimplifying it, but really, Chairperson, it is that simple in terms of the policy and guidelines. So there's a guideline that said, if you are distributing these vials and once you've used them, deface them. So people are supposed to also then be held accountable who were assigned the responsibility in this regard. And I'm also happy to report that this is actually one of the things that we brought to the attention of the department when they were embarking on the rollout, and they quickly updated and implemented their guidelines when they were administering. It's just now a pity that we planned so nicely for it, but the implementation thereof then had some weak spots and weaknesses in it. I think I've reached the bulk of the questions, Honorable Chair. If there's anything that I've missed, there was one from that was also quite specific. I've dealt with unfavorable audit outcomes in the UAFE and the lack of implementation. It was more common from Honorable Clark. But there was also one rather specific one from Honorable Clark in terms of the accruals and the medical claims specifically, where we're asking whether the lawyers are subject to a certain criteria by the law society in terms of whatever they charge. So, Honorable Chair, we are not aware. We know that the department mostly uses the state attorneys, and the state attorneys obviously then would have set criteria, but sometimes the state attorneys also then outsource some of that work. But where they do outsource it, at least it's subject to a process, or it's supposed to be subject to a process in terms of getting those specialist skills. We can certainly follow up for the honorable member in terms of the specific question. And the reason why I'm committing to follow up is because, like I mentioned earlier, the Office of the AG is really going to zoom in on the root causes of the medical legal claims. Part of the zooming in will also seek to determine, when you appointed these guys, the lawyers, did your officials also come and pitch? Did your officials also supply them with sufficient information for them to be able to represent the case sufficiently that could have maybe ultimately resulted in a more positive outcome? And we can just incorporate this particular question in terms of value for money as part of that exploration going forward, Honorable Chair. Yeah, Honorable Chair, I think unless there's a member who vehemently is, feeling that I haven't touched on whatever they've raised, they may feel free. Oh, maybe this in conclusion, Chair, there was one that Chair also raised. I spoke to it earlier when we started the responses. It was on the contractors and the infrastructure, but Chair's question was more specific to ask with, inquiring with regard to the non-performance or the blacklisted contractors who don't perform. Chair, there is certainly a list. I'm not sure of the details, but there is a, they call it the non-performance of something list, where if you have a specific problem with a contractor, then you put them on there and you know them and you cite your case for exactly what the problem was. And these should also be considered as part of the procurement processes when departments and entities engage on procurement when they're procuring contractual services or contracting services. So there is a list. It should be enforced. where it's not enforced. So that's also maybe one of the things that the portfolio committee, we may tangibly recommend be implemented. Ask them when they come, give me a list of all your infrastructure projects, who are all your appointed contractors, and then give me a dashboard report in terms of your progress that they have, that are making on the respective projects. So if one is highlighted in red in terms of lack of progress, then they must clearly indicate quickly what they are doing in terms of consequence management or following that up. And for the ones that the contracts have ended but it's poor quality, they must also then be able to report to the portfolio committee whether they've listed those guys in terms of that list that is provided for such instances, so that other people can then make the exact same informed decisions in their future contracting arrangements. Chair, yeah, I'm going to take a break or a pause here. I hope I've covered all the issues that were raised by all the honourable members. Unless, like I said, if there's a member that feels specifically they raised something that's specific that I haven't addressed, they must please feel free to raise it again under your direction and guidance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We appreciate this frank, robust, honest replies which you had given, Andres, from the AG's office. There is one member who wants to just ask a clarity-seeking question, and I'm going to allow her, but she has one question. That's it, just for clarity. Honorable Ismail, please don't take long. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the AG for the, for their responses, very much appreciated. I just have one clarity-seeking question. Now, once a contractor is declared insolvent, or they, report back that they are now insolvent, or whatever the case may be, are there any processes, that can be taken, to actually check their bank accounts? Because we're finding a lot at all spheres of government, where contractors actually declare themselves insolvent. In the meantime, they've already transferred funds from one bank account to another. So are there any, processes in place to actually check this before actually accepting, they're insolvent and now we've lost that funds and we need to go on, with another contractor. Thank you.
You can respond.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Ismail. What a tough question to ask right at the end when I thought I'm done with my work, I can roll up my sleeves now. it's a very brilliant question, Honourable Ismail, through you, Honourable Chair. So my understanding of the liquidation process, you can't just declare solvency, you need to demonstrate that. The unfortunate challenge now, Honourable Chair, is the fact that the person can come and produce their bank account, and the bank account will show limited funds, but the funds have already been transferred out. So where there's such a suspicion, then the accounting officers and the officials out there are advised to go lodge a complaint should they have such a suspicion, or refer these things for investigation. Because as soon as you then move the funds away, there's an element of suspected criminality in this regard that must then be further explored. But other than that, obviously, like I said, I am an accountant. We don't deal with the issues of criminality. We look at the invoices and the books. But where we suspect certain things, we just refer it. And that's the best response I can give, just to make sure that then where such suspicions are there, that we go and lodge it with the relevant authorities for further investigation.
Thank you very much once again. Let me also then finally congratulate Mr. Belo Musisiliani, who is now responsible for health as the deputy business leader, as you mentioned earlier, so we will be working much more with her in the future. And Ms. Mule Chipe as manager health portfolio. That's from our portfolio committee. And then we, as a concluding remark, we note the input, the suggestions and the recommendations as we wish to improve and execute our work of oversight over the department and the sectors. I want to mention just the four important things which crop up all the time. It's procurement management, project management, consequence management, and the need for contract management unit within the department. So, honorable members, thank you very much for coming today for this very important meeting. We are going to continue with minutes which we need to adopt. We do have some time, And then I'm also going to speak to some points which Honorable Clark had raised. And we should also probably speak about the provincial oversight meetings which we should still have within the near future. So you're very welcome to leave the AG's office, as we will continue with our work. Is that Honorable Clark? I see your hand raised.
Yes, Chairperson. I would just like to make a recommendation, and that is that we ensure that we bring the departments back to this committee and interrogate them in terms of what the AG has recommended. I think it's about high time that these guys need to feel the pain that continue doing this kind of deviation. Thank you.
Thank you. So some concluding remark from you, Andries? Have you left already?
No, thanks, Chair. Honorable Chair, from our side, both myself and my colleagues, we would like to take this opportunity to really thank the committee for the opportunity to come and engage with the committee. Honorable Chair, these engagements are really important. I think you've understood and heard the messages that we've tried to bring forward here today and elevate to your level. I always, I'm a jovial person, Honorable Chair, I'm a lighthearted person. I always say when accountants and auditors make a mistake, then you fix it via a journal or a reconciliation. But when doctors make a mistake, people pass away. So definitely we understand the importance of this sector and for this sector to really perform well. And therefore, all the work that we do, we don't just do it by taking out the big stick and trying to whip them. We also try and partner with them to make sure that we bring the blind spots that could really adversely impact on service delivery to their attention. So we really appreciate your support and your role as well in this regard. And we will continue to work closely with the committee to make sure that we also all work together towards the progression of the health sector. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome to leave. Now we are certain that you have a lot of other work to do. Ms. Machilamba, if we can then go directly to the outstanding minutes, if you can slide those minutes, please. Honourable members, we have minutes of the 9th of March, and please, on the first page, as we always go through this, make certain that you are captured to have been present, or have that you have apologised. That is on page 2, and we will know that this was a briefing by the Commission for Gender Equality on its investigation into choice on termination of pregnancies in South Africa. Page 3, please. You may shout on this platform if there is anything that you pick up, honourable members. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Page 9. And page 10. Can I ask for adoption of these minutes of the 9th of March, please? Any movers?
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sukacha. Any seconder to the movement of Honorable Sukacha for the adoption of these minutes of the 9th of March?
I second the chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Havat, for seconding. Ms. Majalamba, do we have any other minutes?
No, Chair, we are up to date. Thank you, Chair.
As far as I remember, that was the last. Thank you very much. Ms. Majalamba, I do not remember us having anything else we want to talk about today. So I'm just asking if you know of anything that I am missing, maybe now not remembering.
No, Chair, not that I know of.
Thank you very much. So in conclusion, Honourable Members, we heard a request by Honourable Clark around the draft regulations which we had noticed being mentioned. I am not certain that we had officially received such a communication. And then secondly, so it is something that we would put on our agenda for the future, and we do have other programs which we will be embarking upon, and you will get more information on those programs as we will be informed by Ms. Majalamba in the emails. So I cannot say we are definitely going to be doing this in the next week or two. And then we keep on reminding ourselves on the provincial oversight which we are supposed to be having. And we are also mindful that Parliament will arise very soon, but that we hear the issues which are raised by the AG, and that we should make certain that we actually execute our oversight work much more stringently in terms of the sectors or the provinces. So with that having been said, Honourable Members, I'm going to close this meeting. There is nothing else that we need to do. Have a very good day. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
Recording stopped.